This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. Chris Fafalius here. It's Throwback Thursday once again here at Chris Makes a Podcast. And today we're throwing it way back to November 9th of 2020. Our guest that day was Chris Carrabba, and he discussed the beloved Dashboard Confessional song from the early 2000s, Hands Down. You know, this was only the 24th episode we ever did. In fact, next week's episode is number 124, so it was almost 100 episodes ago, and I can really hear in a lot of ways how far we've come as a show. As usual, I went in and added some more song clips, and I did a little light editing to make it flow a little bit better, but even if I hadn't done that, this episode is great. Chris Carrabba is definitely one of the nicest guys I ever met in the world of music, and that really comes across in this episode. Also, towards the very end, he mentions that he's been recovering and relearning to play guitar. This is in reference to a motorcycle accident that he had, and the good news, in the event you didn't know, is that he's now fully recovered and has been out on tour recently. Okay, so now that I got that all out of the way, I'll get out of the way myself and leave you to the episode from November 9th, 2020. This is episode number 24. Chris Carrabba discusses Dashboard Confessionals, Hands Down.
Hi, everybody. Today's guest is Chris Carrabba, lead singer and guitarist for Dashboard Confessional. Chris and I cut our collective teeth in the same Florida music circles, and it was a pleasure catching up with him. We discussed the writing, recording, and legacy of the Dashboard Confessional song, Hands Down. I mentioned that the imagery and descriptive nature of the lyrics are what really makes this song special. Seeing the lyrics printed out in front of me was like reading a highly detailed poem. Chris talked about the acoustic version of the song being released prior to the full band version that we dove into here, and how polarizing it was initially to fans who loved his original take on the song. Chris explained to me why I couldn't find the official video of the song anywhere online, and how the song was given yet another set of legs years later in 2015 when Taylor Swift invited Chris to play Hands Down at her best friend's birthday party. Bizarre? Yes. Amazing? Absolutely. For all this and much more, stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
You and I kind of have a shared history here, both being from Florida. Of course, Chris started his career in a band back in the day called the Vacant Andes, his first band, which I want to say Less Than Jake played with you guys at some point.
We definitely played together at FAU, Florida Atlantic University.
Florida Atlantic University. There you go. I was going to say maybe the, what was it, that place, the old schoolhouse in Vero?
I saw you there. I saw you there, but we didn't play there. Oh, I love that place. I saw the Refuse. I saw Refuse there too. That was one wild show for a place like that.
I could imagine. And gosh, we could talk about that place for a whole episode. You know, of course, Chris went on to Further Seems Forever, and of course, Dashboard Confessional, which just was a side project that turned into the enormous monster that it has become. And you know, I had emailed Chris asking about a couple of songs. Of course, Screaming Infidelities was one of them. Vindicated was another, and Hands Down was the third choice. And Chris was gracious enough to say, you know what, I'm good with any of those. And I went ahead and picked Hands Down. And I gotta tell you, Chris, I don't get too much lyrical envy, but I envy you on this one, man. This one of the themes here on Krista Makes a Podcast is the lyrics and how they tell a story, and the imagery that they produce. And man, this one is full of it. I've done a number of shows now, and I mean this with all sincerity. These are probably my favorite lyrics I've come across.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, it's testament to, I know that's what you're really known for, and it's just, song is fantastic. So take us back. I know the prior record in 2001 was The Places You've Come to Fear the Most. So between 01 and 03, when this record, A Mark, A Mission, A Brand, A Scar, hands down from that record, when was Hands Down actually written?
Let me think here. It was probably written in 2002. And it was written as a part of like a four-part story of songs that was an EP called, that was a limited release called the So Impossible EP.
And that was the acoustic version.
Mm-hmm. That was the acoustic version. So why did you kiss my kill me? So won't you kill me? So I die happy. So I imagine it was like, I want to say summer, but who can remember because I lived in Florida? I think it was summertime.
It's hard to tell seasons, right?
It's hard to tell. Hard to mark the time. So I think it was the summer of 2002 that I wrote Hands Down.
Okay. Remember where you were at when you wrote it? Were you sitting in your house on an acoustic guitar? Were you like, I have to write a song today? Or was it one of those things that just maybe you had the lyrics in a notebook? How did it come about?
So at that point, I didn't have my own place. When Dashboard started, I like got rid of everything and moved into my van. I remember I was like looking for an apartment. And about that same time, my mom went on vacation and asked me to house sit for a couple of days. She went on a business trip, excuse me. And so I was at my mother's apartment, which was weird, you know, because I hadn't lived there in a long time. And I remember that I had this there was like this a peaceful nature about, you know, being back home for the first time in so long. And I think that contributed a little bit to reminiscing about what would be the subject matter.
Because the subject matter, and I'm just going to go ahead, I save this for a little later in the episode. Was this written from personal experience or was this a story that you just kind of wrote?
So the song, like most songs that I write, and probably what I think most writers are culling from their personal lives with a little or a lot of poetic license. But there wasn't a ton of poetic license in this song. It was like kind of like a fruitful experience. It was kind of like grand enough, the life experience, that I didn't need to employ a lot of poetic license. It had enough on its own.
Because there's a lot here. There's a lot of lyrics in this song. And, you know, I'm sure my listeners are probably sick of me saying what I'm going to say right now, but I've said this in a number of episodes, but some of the best songs, and I'm only speaking of the chord arrangement right now, not the overdubs and the extra production, which we'll get into, which is fantastic in this song. But, you know, this chord arrangement, this is a pretty simple thing that's going on here. But yet you have these lyrics and this just imagery. And I've seen what this song does to your fans. It's unreal. I've seen it live. I've seen it on a number of YouTube videos I watched recently when I was researching the song. And it's just, they're living these lyrics. And the lyrics are what brings this song just to complete life. Not that the song itself and the shell and the chords and everything aren't good, but, you know, and I say simple, not in a derogatory fashion. Sometimes the best songs are what they are. They are simple, and it's all the lyrics. It's how you sing it. It's the intonation in your voice. And let's go into the first verse now.
Breathe in for luck. Breathe in so deep. This air is blessed. You share with me. This night is wild, so calm and dull. These hearts, they race from self-control. Your legs are smooth as they graze mine. We're doing nothing at all.
Pretty long verse. There's no pre-chorus. The first lyric is breathe in for luck, breathe in so deep. This air is blessed, you share with me. This night is wild, so calm and dull. These hearts, they race from self-control. Your legs are smooth as they graze mine. We're doing fine. We're doing nothing at all. So if you could set that first verse up for us.
So you have to envision that the couple are, in point of fact, I mean, maybe this isn't made clear anywhere in the song, but in reality, this is where it was. There's a party going on that I was at, that we were at, and we squirreled our way upstairs to a room just to be alone together. And though, you know, there was sexual tension, and as you would expect, you know, there was something more to it. The tension, I mean, there was something deeper. And so the whole thing for me in that moment, as I'm writing about the song, was about just like slowing time down just a little bit, or a lot, to take it in. There was an import to the moment. There was something about it that even then seemed like, this is an unusual thing, you know, like there was something special about the situation. There's something special about the couple. There was something special about the time and place. And even in my youth, I knew enough to try to slow things down and like savor it.
Okay. That's a very interesting take. And now that I reread them, as you said that, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you mentioned poetic license a little bit ago. When I was reading these lyrics, actually staring at them as I am right now, this reads like a poem. And I'm not being self-deprecating when I say I wish I could write lyrics like this. You know, I have my strong suits and I do my thing, but envy you. I envy songwriters that can do this, that can paint this kind of a picture. It would come off really forced and corny if I tried to write something like this. And it's such a talent. It's really awesome. What I love about this first verse is there's ways that you rhyme words that shouldn't rhyme together in this. And there's lines such as, "This night is wild." And the follow-up line of that is, "So calm and dull." So how can something be wild and calm and dull, but yet it works?
Well, I guess that's what I was that's what I was kind of like drawing a finer point on, or this, I can draw a finer point on it. But I was kind of broad stroking it with the fact that there was like chaos going on all around. It was like an explosive night, you know, like those youthful parties can be. But as we, you know, nothing is ever one thing, right? And nothing is ever just one way. And so there was a part of it that was like, in my mind, I was thinking, certainly when I wrote the song, and I think probably when I lived the experience, that isn't literally what I'm saying here, but the spirit of it was that in spite of this kinetic thing that was going on all around us, our moment, by comparison, was very calm and quiet and almost mundane, that we chose to slip away into, you know, into our own little space that we found.
Yeah.
And there was a long lead up to this in the songwriting process, because I'd written three songs that led to this song. And so you've already heard, if you've heard if you're just following it from the EP, which, you know, I don't mean to like hedge my bets as I try to explain one song by using the others.
No, please do.
If, you know, if you're following the other ones, you know that like both people in the relationship have gone through their own like little bits of self-doubt, bits of great overabundance of confidence, which has led them both to this period of like, oh, well, here we are. Let's be present. Which is like, you know, we were young, and so that's weird, you know, to know to be present when you're young. When you're young, you're thinking about next. That seems to be the only thing. Maybe that's one of the reasons this moment in my life became something worthy of a song much later, is because I really lived right then and there. I lived right there.
Yeah.
I didn't escape the moment in the moment, which is the foolishness of youth, but kind of the amazing part of youth at the same time.
Yeah, you were able to take that and harness it in an amazing way. And just the imagery and the descriptiveness of this first verse is again, I I'm trying to toot your own horn. These lyrics are just such fine descriptors. There's no pre-chorus, as I mentioned a moment ago, but what is almost considered kind of like a pre-chorus is the very end of the verse, when you kind of you stay low range wise in your voice, and you kind of whisper, "We're doing nothing at all." And that part could have almost, when you listen to it, when it stops there, that's the part that could have lifted, you know, "We're doing nothing at all," like kind of really go up an octave, but you save going up an octave for the chorus. And that's why that chorus just lifts, you know, and there's something so emotional about the way you whisper that line, "We're doing nothing at all," that just tugs at all those fans' heartstrings. So talk a little bit about that. Do you remember that exact part? Was it always like that?
It was always like that. I don't know whether like I'm speaking to myself or she's speaking to me or if I'm speaking to her. I mean, you know how when you're singing a song night after night for your shows, you might find it has one line has a different meaning three nights in a row. Right?
Okay. Yeah, of course.
So sometimes I don't know who's speaking the line. I mean, I should say I don't always know who's speaking the line. But I will say that it was conversational. And it was almost like whispered, almost like a secret. It was just really like a private admission.
And then we get into the first chorus, and this is where you go up and your voice goes, and that's why the whole thing lifts. And prior to that, the drums were doing a very minimal hi-hat, like kick drum type thing. And now we're in double time. The band kicks in.
We're doing nothing at all. Well, someone that you kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me?
The lyric in the chorus here is, "My hopes are so high that your kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me so I die happy? My heart is yours to fill or burst, to break or bury, or wear as jewelry, whichever you prefer." And again, bury and jewelry do not rhyme, but you somehow made them rhyme. the way you sang it. And that's another thing I love about this podcast. I found that with lyrics, and I do that myself. There's sometimes that we call them a soft rhyme as lyricists, but it just works so well there. To break or bury or wear as jewelry, whichever you prefer. And now, is that whichever you prefer, is that you directing that at your love interest here or just in general?
I think I'm directing it at her. Yeah, I'm directing it at her. At least that one line, whichever you prefer.
So you're fine. You're fine with having your heart broken. You just want this moment. You just want the chance to.
Yes. So I'm kind of like surrendering to the like chance that this could all
go to hell.
This could all go to hell fast. I mean, we like this moment that I think is really special could be fucked instantly.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to risk it. And why am I willing to risk it?
Because you're young.
Because I'm young and I've never had an experience like this before. I wasn't as young when I wrote it. I was young still, but I wasn't as young. It was a couple few years later. By the time I'd written the song, I'd certainly had my share of rejection and heartbreak and also success with relationships and all that. You know, I've explored the gambit of, the full range, emotional range, or a fuller emotional range at that point than I had before.
Right.
But at the time of writing the song, it was just the possibility, the air of possibility was special. That in and of itself was as special as how I felt about the person. And, you know, that willingness to bear yourself and to put yourself in a position where you could be rejected is a brave place to get to. It's not like I understand that some of the there's more than a little heart on your sleeve in this song.
Yeah.
But it also is I find it it's brazen and brave.
Well, there's a lot of vulnerability going on here is what it sounds like.
There is.
You know, you're really young, it's exciting, you're first, all this and that, but you're letting the person know your hopes are super high. The kiss might kill me, but hey, I'm ready to jump in here. Let's do this. No matter what happens at what cost.
Yes. And I like that feeling.
It's exciting. I think that's what we call the honeymoon phase, you know, and those, those relationships where everything is just so exciting. Like, do you want to take a walk down the street with that doesn't have any trees or any sidewalks or nothing? Yeah, let's do it. It's great. I'm with you.
What? You want to do that? Let's do that. How glorious.
You know,
I've never seen asphalt like this. Oh my God.
And then years later, you pay for a $10,000 vacation to London and you hate each other. You know. that's great. It makes total sense. I also have a little side note here. I called it the guitar right speaker noodle. There's a guitar part that's panned off to the right speaker here in the chorus that I just love. It's this counter melody that just adds such a hauntingness to this chorus. Was that something you thought of? Was that something that, of course, Gil Norton produced the record? I want to talk a little bit about Gil in a moment. Gil also produced Color and the Shape by the Foo Fighters and Futures by Jimmy Eat World, two of my all-time favorite records.
As well as Pixies records.
Yes, yes.
Gil for me.
Who could forget? Did Gil bring some of those production factors? Because again, that counter melody in there is haunting. I love it.
So I'm trying to remember if that counter melody is on the EP, which predates working with Gil. I know what you're talking about. I just don't know for a fact if it existed. And, you know, to be honest with you, I can't remember. I wish I could tell you that I knew the answer of like who came up with ornamental bits at any time. Because
it was 18 years ago.
and it's a grab bag. You know how it is with a band.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, there's... People are changing each other's parts and their own parts constantly. That's what being in a room with other musicians is and why it's so special.
I do that all the time. I'll go back and hear one of our songs. I honestly don't know if Roger played the guitar lead or if I did, you know, because we both play in the studio. And it's like, did I do that? I don't remember.
Yeah. like in later records, like Johnny and I would, and AJ and I would sit together and like on the same take, you know, same track. Like if somebody had an idea, they just like, instead of explaining, you just hand the guitar to them or they'd hand it to you and you play that part that, you know, those four bars and then hand it back. And that's that.
Right.
And there's a trust in there. That's really pretty, really, really special. But I will tell you this. I think that it's a very major key song with a kind of a positive, uber positive subject matter in the lyricism. And so ornamentally, I was trying to give it a little, to make sure it wasn't too saccharine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there was intention there.
Yeah. And that definitely provides some tension. I just love that. So yeah, something else I thought that was really interesting. And again, going to that, sometimes it has to be simplistic, but this just gives that one chord change that I love. It's this, in the verse, the second chord is your C minor. And in the chorus, the second chord is the G minor. And that's the only difference between the chord arrangement. Was that something that was kind of written from the beginning? Do you remember? And what was the conscious thought behind actually going to the different chord for the chorus, but having the rest of the chord stay the same?
So the original EP that it's on, So Impossible, it's all in the key of E with the exception of, one is in C minor, but that's E, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
There's one that's B, but in the E mode for, so I'm really using that key to its fullest so that the story feels seamless. But when I went to the chorus of Hands Down as a writer, having an ascending chord pattern like that and going to the three chord, which is a little bit unusual and underused in a song like that, I felt gave it, you know, you get the sense that like the thing's taken off.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do, and I didn't want to do anything really radical because I made such a leap in the vocal range.
Right. Yeah. No. And you didn't have to do anything, just that one chord change, because again, this song, and not to take anything away, the song is beautifully written, the chords and how it's executed, just the drums and the tempo. You guys nailed it, but it's really about the lyrics and this melody that just kills people. It really is. But to have that one chord difference, I picked up on it right away when I was studying the song, you know, and of course I heard this song in years past, but to really sit down and go, wait, what happens there? Ooh, you know, I picked up the guitar and I'm like, that's neat. I love stuff like that.
I do too. And I've been a student of it my whole life. And so it was where like the song wasn't written in a painstaking way. It really came out very quickly, as is the case with songs that become special oftentimes. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's the ones, I've said this before, you think by rights, it's the one you spend weeks or months on that will have the longest legs. But it's really the ones that kind of spill out that end up really connecting with people for, you know, the most deeply and for the longest time. And I don't know why that is, because I think that, well, I do know why that is. You know, I think that there's an urgency that people just connect to. And I don't think that you spend less time on those songs that come out quickly. I think you're spending time subconsciously, or on all the 100 songs you wrote before that one, you'd written before that one that lead you there. But in any event, I know that I didn't toy with recording that section. The only thing I remember consciously thinking about was the voicing of the second chord and where it should, you know, where it should be and how it should be held. There's no fifth. The fifth is in the, is, there's almost, there's a sus note in there in the, but it's like half diminished, strangely. Uh-huh. So anyway, it's just, I remember toying with the chord just a little bit, but just enough, but I knew it would be, I mean, if I was playing it on bass, I wouldn't have changed it either. You know, when you only have one note, you know,
the root note.
That's it. That the root note was enough. That the simplicity here was in reaction to the fact that, like my other band, and I was only recently out of, but when I started Dashboard, I was still in. Further Seems Forever was very complex.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so some of Dashboard by design, especially early Dashboard, was to allow simplicity to have its place as a point of strength.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think a song with these lyrics and the melody would have warranted it to be any, you know, more chords and have more stuff going on. I think it had to be this.
It's already obnoxiously in your face.
Well, yeah. And I would say obnoxiously, and that's a good word here. You know, it's in your face in a beautiful way. When we end the chorus, the first chorus, whichever you prefer, it immediately goes into verse two.
Let's not get busted. Just lay entwined here, undiscovered. All the stupid questions. Hey, did you get some? Man, that is so dumb. Stay quiet, stay near, stay close, they can't hear. So we can get some.
The lyrics just continue with this imagery and this descriptiveness, and it makes you feel like you're there with what you're saying. To me, the words are hushed. Let's not get busted, because you're hiding in a room. Just lay entwined here, undiscovered, safe from the hour and all the stupid questions. Hey, did you get some? Man, that is so dumb. Stay quiet, stay near, stay close. They can't hear, so we can get some. And that line again, so we can get some, is almost whispered. We musicians use this word quite a bit, and it's this sexy thing that yeah. that I know has gripped the hearts of many many females out there. And again, it's that same whisper as the first line there. So let's talk about this verse a little bit. I love that line. Hey, did you get some? Man, that's so dumb. But that's kind of what you were there for.
Yeah. So it's more like that's so dumb is the for me was like, is this other people's business?
Yeah.
So when they ask you later, which they do, right?
Yeah.
Like even like adults asking each other this stuff. Like, why is that part of our like lizard brain intact forever?
I don't know.
You know, we try to mature beyond it, but you know, like if everybody falls back into it at some point, you know, they want to know the nitty gritty.
Yeah. What'd you do after the movie? I took her home. That's all.
So there again was me saying to or us saying to each other, like, this is ours. This moment, it's just ours. And, you know, like they might ask, you know, did you get something? This is such a stupid question. But you know what? They're like, I sure hope we do.
Waiting here with hopes the phone will ring, and I'm thinking awful things, pretty sure that few would notice.
We got to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, but we'll be right back with part two of our Throwback Thursday episode with Chris Caraba.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
Everything's working when everything's broken, and you smile like the saint, but you curse like a sailor, and your eyes say the joke's on me.
And now, back to the show.
Something I have to ask right now before we go any further. Does the person in question in this song know that it was about her?
Yes.
Cool. Okay. Was that welcomed, or was that weird? Or because sometimes that can be weird. Like you break up and you wrote a song about me and they get aggravated, or, you know, I've seen this happen before. Or was it welcomed?
It was welcomed.
Awesome.
I don't think I took anybody to task here.
I don't think anybody could prove it was about them. I'm just, you know who it's about, and that person knows who it's about, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, again, when I hear that stop there, a lot of bands, I'd be inclined to raise right there and go to that octave so we can get some, but no, you keep it breathy and then boom.
Get some. My hopes are so high that your kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me? So I die happy. My heart is yours to feel our best, to break or bury. Where is jewelry? Whichever you prefer.
Chorus 2 is the same lyrics. I'm going to read them again real quick. As the first verse, my hopes are so high that your kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me so I die happy? My heart is yours to fill or burst, to break or bury, or where is jewelry, whichever you prefer. And real quick, before we talk about chorus two, I didn't mention, and I want to, in verse two, that doesn't happen in verse one. And I love this part. I call it the left speaker noodly guitar. So over in the left speaker, you got this counter melody that's really haunt. The chorus one's great, but that's the haunting one.
All the stupid questions. Hey, did you get some? Man, that is so dumb. Stay quiet, stay near, stay close.
Do you remember how that part came about, or who wrote it?
Yeah, I remember there were a few things that Gil wanted to do. He wanted like the intro to come back. He wanted the ending section that we'll talk about next to occur again in the song. More than once, I should say. And I just was thoroughly opposed to both of these ideas. And I think that, you know, Gil is a genius. And so I'm not saying I was right, but I felt very strongly that the structure of the song shouldn't be altered. So one concession I made was not a concession, but one kind of his idea led to this guitar bit, which is a kind of an echoing of the intro.
Yes.
But within the chordal structure that's happening now in the verse.
It's just this bit of, as we musicians call ear candy, that I just, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. And when it's done right and it's executed right in here, it's just, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't think I would have ever thought that would have fit within the, under chordally it fits, but I didn't think it would fit while singing.
It almost feels like it shouldn't. I know what you're saying with that.
Yeah, so, but Gil was like, this is, just play it. I remember him saying, like, just play it like he played back, the rough track. He's like, just play the intro. And I was like, well, I can't play the whole intro. Let me just play this section of the intro that's circuitous. And whoa, this is why he's Gil Norton. Okay.
I know. And I've talked about that on the show before, the value of a good producer that you get along with that can just open your mind to that stuff. And a lot of times the producers, some of them are guitar players, some of them are songwriters, some of them aren't. And some of the ones I've worked with that aren't, I'll say, well, just play the intro over. And you're like, well, it doesn't work. It goes to this chord. And that's kind of what you were just saying. Like, well, I can't play the whole thing, but I could play this part of it. You know, this part will work with it. And then the light bulb goes off at that point. You're like, holy crap.
So let me point out though, James Wisner produced the song to begin with when we made it on the EP. And James Wisner, just for a moment here, let me just, as a side, I've worked with some amazing producers, and some I've been in complete awe of, like Daniel and Walt.
Sure.
And some have been, become lifelong friends, like Butch Walker or Adam Schlesinger before he passed.
Sure.
But the person that I learned the very most from about music is James Wisner. And I remember when we did Hands Down, that it was the first time, it was not the first time I worked with him. He produced Vegan Andy stuff, Further stuff, and already a bunch of Dashboard stuff. It was the first time where he was like, this is right. Like, he thought everything else I did was right in the way it was, but wanted thought, but we could do this, or we could try that. I remember being shocked that he was like, this is, we don't mess with this. This is it.
Yeah.
This is how the song goes. And maybe that's why later when I worked with Gil, when he said, let's change the structure a little bit, I was like, absolutely not. And I think it's because somebody that I looked up to already so much and had learned so much from and continue to learn now as I sit here so much from James Wisner. I had said, like, this is it. This is the way this song goes.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to talk about that getting into this last section of the song. I'm not going to lie. I probably would have, if I was presented this song to produce, you said, hey, Chris, what do you think of this? I would be like, the arrangement's weird.
It is weird.
Yeah, the arrangement's weird. You don't hear the chorus again after this breakdown? What are you thinking? Well, why not? But listening to it as a fan and analyzing it for this show, the song is a perfect pop gem. 3 minutes, 17 seconds. It doesn't need to go anywhere from this, especially lyrically, because the lyrics, you can't go back after what you said here. And up to chorus two, when chorus two ends, you're at a minute and 57 seconds. So almost... that's a little more than half the song, but the other half of the song, essentially the last 1 minute and 20 seconds of the song, it goes halftime in what I'm calling a post-chorus outro. It would almost sounds like a bridge at first, but it just keeps going, and it's the same riff hammering you for a minute and 20 seconds.
When we realize it's only that this one that we share together. The streets were wet and the gates were locked, so I turned down.
It doesn't need to be another riff because it's the lyrics that are taking you on this ride. And I'd like to read these lyrics now. And there's quite a bit of them. But again, the story here is just incredible. And this is the only time that we get the title of the song in, which is great, too. It's not in the choruses anywhere else, but it starts out, hands down, this is the best date I can ever remember. Always remember the sound of the stereo, the dim of the soft lights, the scent of your hair that you twirled in your fingers, and the time on the clock when we realized it's so late, and this walk that we shared together. The streets were wet and the gate was locked, so I jumped it and I let you in. And you stood at your door with your hands on my waist, and you kissed me like you meant it. And I knew that you meant it, that you meant it, that you meant it, and I knew that you meant it, that you meant it. And the song ends right there, but then there's, and we'll talk about this, we'll talk about the lyrics first, but I have to mention this now, so I don't space on it. There's this weird little drum hit after, but there's this certain charm and realness. It almost sounds like it was another drum take that your drummer just kind of went da-dum and ended. How did that come about? That's interesting because the song just ends on the E flat, and you'd think like, okay, the song's done, and then like there's this little drum flam there. How'd that come about?
Well, I think the whole thing is building with this kinetic energy. I'd never realized it was that long until you said it. But gosh, that's a long time, man. Holy shit!
It's great. It's great.
So I think that you're asking your drummer to play that same groove for a lifetime. And I can only imagine.
He just wants his fucking moment.
Yeah. I think I got to imagine maybe during rehearsals that he just probably did that once and we were like, oh, that's how it ends. I don't know for a fact.
You don't need to know. I just had to bring it up because it was really odd when I was like, again, I like to really get in.
But those are the kinds of things, Chris, that like would happen. Maybe this happens with probably all bands, right? But just something odd happens somewhere for some reason. And this one could have been fatigue, and you go, and the rest of the band goes, that's it. And the guy doing it goes, what's it?
Yeah.
They don't even know.
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes you come up with something and you think this is brilliant, and you're right or wrong, but sometimes you just throw, it's like, throwing your pick, and you accidentally hit the strings and somebody goes, that's it. Oh, okay. And in this case, with the drummer being so expressive of a drummer. Yeah. Anyway, there was an emotionality to even that last little.
Oh yeah, and
I wouldn't call it a flub, ad lib,
yeah,
moment.
In my notes, I wrote there's a certain
sacrosanct or something.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes there's a certain charm and realness. It just adds this extra, as if the song already didn't feel autobiographical and real enough. There was this extra little, cherry on top. This last part again, I talked about a moment ago. That you meant it, and I knew that you meant it. That you meant it. The last lyric, it couldn't go back to the chorus to me. That's how it had to end. It's the perfect ending. So again, as a fan now listening to the song and analyzing it, it is perfect. But if I was presented this song to produce it, I probably would have sided with Gil. It is and you even just said that you can't believe that almost half the song is the ending.
I can't believe it, but I can tell that the guy who wrote it listened to The Cure a lot. just to understand that that's an option.
Yeah, no, it's but again, it's almost like I didn't even think about this or write this down. I'm just thinking of this now. It's almost like there's two separate songs here in one. It's really neat. I can't say it enough. I really good job on these lyrics. They're so descriptive and they just your fans just absolutely love it. I typically will ask this question during the show, and I kind of already know the answer. This song had a life of its own on the EP before it was released. You had been playing it. So what was the reaction when you released this version? Was there any flack of, oh, it's not as good as the first version or things like
that? Of course. Yeah. It's polarizing. It was a polarizing thing to do. The reviews were mixed.
Of course.
At best.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it became the definitive version. And I'm not quite sure who made that decision. It wasn't us.
Yeah. No, it's always the fans, right? It's the fans that dictate that. What was the reaction like as a full band? Like, you remember the first time you played it, what that was like to see the audience? Because they already knew the song, but now it's full band. It's electric. It's live. It had to be great.
So, you know, in the beginning, a dashboard for 2 or 3 years, it was just me and a guitar. So just having a band was tricky. And I had patient bandmates that I said, look, if we want this to be part of what Dashboard is, we're going to have to really introduce this slowly. And so they would spend a lot of the sets on the side of the stage coming up for only 3 songs or something like that. Patient guys. with Hands Down, it became the version that you hear on Mark Emission, but it didn't just go from the acoustic to that. First, it went through this like process on stage where they didn't play until the coda, until that post-chorus part. Mm-hmm. And they came in there.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we had some time where the song like evolved in front of the live audience. And I think the live audience informed the structure. The structure was there, but the instrumentation.
Interesting. Okay. A couple more things I want to touch on. Something I find incredibly interesting, and you may have the answer because my producer, Chris Afalios, he swears that there was a video for this song. Neither him nor I, Google, YouTube, we cannot find it. However, there is a lyric video that was posted by a fan in 2010 that has 4.8 million views to this song, which is insane. What happened to the original video? Do you know?
The original video or the lyric video?
Not the lyric video. So what?
Oh, the original
video. Yeah, we can't find it on YouTube. We Googled it. It's like it doesn't exist. It was like it was scrubbed off the internet. We can't find it.
Yeah. What happened to it? Interscope happened to it. I don't know. You know?
Why?
Vagrant. I don't know, man. I don't work at the label.
Yeah, but yeah. I will say this. I'm kind of talking out loud. That wasn't directed at you, Chris.
Yeah. I'll give you the breakdown that as I know it. You know, I was on Vagrant Records. Vagrant Records was an indie label. They did a partnership with Interscope to kind of handle the fact that their bands were having their moment and maybe outpacing their ability to fulfill orders. You know, on a very basic level, just to, you know, for instead of getting to the real nitty gritty. Gotcha. And so then there was, you know, some dual ownership. And then I know that there was, at one point, there was some battle between Interscope and YouTube, also Interscope and iTunes. These were different things at different times, but I know that they happened. And I know there was some.
Understood.
Yeah. So like, you know, I believe the video will be back up. It had a, it's strange. It's really pretty beautiful. It's a really beautiful video. Visually.
I would have loved to have seen it. I don't remember it from back in the day. But these are the types of things, Chris, that I'll let the listeners know that we as band guys, we hate that part of the business.
Yeah, we hate it. Hey, we hate it. I mean, like, to be quite frank, like, I don't even like making videos in the first place. It's a thing you do, but it's not like the thing you do. Yeah. So the fact that it was gone, like, that's something that never's like, oh, I've got to get that fixed. It's like, if the song was gone, I'd be chasing it. But the video's gone, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. One last thing that I think is incredible. You know, it just shows you how this song affected people. In 2015, Taylor Swift called you to play Hands Down. And folks, please check this out on YouTube. Type in Taylor Swift Hands Down. It'll come right up. She called Chris to play Hands Down for her best friend's birthday party.
Just asking a random question. Do we have anyone here named Chris Caraba? Is there a Chris Caraba?
Haley Williams from Paramore was there. She joined in. It's Chris with an acoustic guitar surrounded by a ton of women.
Hands down, this is the best day I can ever remember. Always remember the sound of the
and what was that like? So did your manager get a call? How'd you get contacted for that? How'd that go down?
So I knew Taylor for a little while. You know, she had So she posted this, she tweeted something like that she was singing Hands Down with, you know, she was out on the road and she was singing Hands Down full blast, something to that effect that she tweeted. And I knew I'd be in Nashville in a few days to play a show. So I tweeted her, if you're going to be, you know, come and sing it with me. And she did. She came to the show and we had a great time. We really hit it off. She is an amazing person. I really genuinely love her. I will go to bat for her with anybody that knocks her. I think she's just the real thing.
She writes all her stuff. She's amazing.
She's a badass businesswoman. Yeah. And she is total respect. She's fiercely devoted to her fans. I mean, I could go on it.
Yeah.
But the thing that was like very like, oh yeah, that's a different world than I'm from, was like I then realized at one point when she's leaving that she was talking about catching a plane, she was talking about her own plane and that she was talking about going back on tour, which I realized only then was in Europe that she'd flown home from just to see my show and was flying back to Europe. So
anyway, flipping a coin with another bandmate for the middle seat and coach.
I don't think so. Not that night. No. So, yeah, so that's how we became friendly. It was just like, you know, on a lark, you know, I mean, I'm glad she is a fan of that song or the band or both. But, you know, I was brazen enough to just say, hey, come to the show. And she is, she doesn't like, I don't think she walks in this rarefied air like some celebrities do. She's just like, oh, cool. I'll come to the show.
Oh, man.
So anyway, she just reached out to me, want to come play this party. And I thought, well, who wouldn't, I mean, I was just said yes, because, I remember people being like, well, what are you going to charge her? This, that, and that. Charge her? Like, she just invited me to a birthday party for a friend. What would you charge somebody to go to a birthday? Like, that's crazy. People go crazy.
Can I borrow your jet?
When they hear a name like Taylor Swift, like, oh, what's your angle going to be? Like, man, she invited me to a party. I'm going to go.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. And just not that you did it for these reasons. I know you didn't, Chris, but just... money, you're not even thinking that. It's just you're doing it because you're just like you're completely blown away that this huge celebrity wants you. This song touched her and her friend, but you know, just the mileage that you got out of it. I know you didn't do it for that reason, but just like the story of it, just the story alone is fascinating.
It is one of those things where you realize that's top five for the stories I'll be able to tell in the nursing home.
Well, you know, and it's 11 years, or excuse me, 12 years after the fact that the song was released, that it gave the song just another set of legs.
You know what? Another thing that I remember from that night is, you know, Haley's a superstar, but she is. From our world. And so I remember her like looking at me at one point, like, you believe this? Like, we're here. I was like, yeah, I'm glad you're here too, Haley.
Yeah.
This is plain. It was incredible, but it was
real. No, I know. Haley does.
I should say unusual.
Absolutely. Weird. Yeah. Haley does come from our world. She was 16 years old. She opened a show for Less Than Jake at Janice Landing. I remember it was just her and her father came mm-hmm. out and we knew as a band that she was going somewhere. She just
You only had to hear her for about a bar.
Yeah, she had that star quality, and she's an absolute sweetheart. But Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. I absolutely love this song. I'm so proud of all your success in your career, and I wish you continued success. At this point, if you'd like to leave the listeners with anything, Chris Carrabba, solo, dashboard, confessional, anything else you have going on you'd like to talk about.
I will say to my people that have listened to my music and have kind of watched the journey I've been on this year that I appreciate the many, many well wishes as I've been recovering from my pretty severe injuries and learning how to play, slowly learning how to play guitar again. I will say this, man, I have not forgotten how much I love music, and I'm really fighting to have it under my fingers again, and I'm enjoying every step.
That's fantastic. That's great. Well, again, much continued success to you, and I hope you heal and get back out there as soon as you can.
Thanks, Chris. Great to speak with you again.
Vindicated. I am selfish. I am wrong. I am right. I swear I knew it all along, and I am flawed.
Hey, I hope you all enjoyed yet another Throwback Thursday episode. If you weren't with us since the beginning, don't forget to scroll back through the back catalog and check out some of those early episodes. This Chris Carrabba episode was part of a couple month span where we had guests like Jeff Rosenstock, Laura Jane Grace, Mark Hoppus, Brian Baker, Mike Herrera, Kay Flay, Derek Wibley, Matt Skiba, Aaron Barrett, Travie McCoy, and a bunch of other awesome songwriters. I hope you all have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday with another new episode of Krista Makes a Podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.